1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call this February 17th, 2022 meeting of the Taxes Committee to order under rules 10.01, remote hearings. And also a reminder to those watching that if you want access to any of the documents for this Taxes Committee, go to the Minnesota Legislature website, go to the House of Representatives, to committees and divisions, go to Taxes Committee, and on that homepage, look down to the lower right, you will have all of those things. So, Ms. Griska, first order of business is to take the roll.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt, present.
Representative Marquardt, present. Representative Lislegard.
Representative Lislegard, present.
Representative Lislegard, present. Representative Davids.
Davids, present.
Representative Davids, present. Representative Agbaje is excused. Representative Carlson.
Carlson's here.
Representative Carlson, present. Representative Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Representative Detmer is present. Representative Garofalo. Representative Gomez.
Gomez, present.
Representative Gomez is present. Representative Herr.
Herr, present.
Representative Herr is present. Representative Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Representative Hertas, present. Representative Howard.
Howard, present.
Representative Howard, present. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, present.
Representative McDonald, present. Representative Miller. Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Moran, present. Representative Mortensen.
Present.
Representative Mortensen, present. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Robbins, present. Representative Sundell.
Present.
Representative Sundell, present. Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Schultz, present. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson, present. Representative Swazinski.
Present.
Representative Swazinski, present. Representative Joachim.
Present.
Representative Joachim, present. We have a quorum.
Ms. Griska, thank you so much. Next order of business is to approve the February 16th, 2022 minutes of the Taxes Committee. Representative McDonald, would you like the honors?
Yes, I approve the taxes as the minutes as written.
We will make that motion. We still have to approve them, Representative McDonald. You cannot solely approve them, but you can make the motion. So we have the McDonald motion to approve the February 16, 2022 minutes. Any comments, clarifications? If not, if I could ask you to temporarily unmute yourselves, we'll call for the vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The February 16, 2022 minutes are approved. So, members, this is kind of the second day of the focus again. A lot of focus in this tax committee is going to be addressing the workforce shortage. And so yesterday we had a big idea. Today's another big idea on how we can not only retain young workers and families, but attract young workers and families to the state of Minnesota. And so we have first up House File 3283, the only bill we're going to hear today. Who would like to move that bill for Representative Cotiza Latum?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill.
Representative Joachim moves to lay over House File 3283 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. Representative Cotiza Latum, welcome to the Taxes Committee, and I know you have an A1 amendment, and I think it looks pretty technical. So someone would move the A1 amendment, if that's okay. Representative Cotiza Latum, we could put this on, and then you could explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's correct. Mr. Chair, I'll move the A1.
Representative Joachim moves the A1 amendment. Representative Cotiza Latum, what does that do?
It is, like you mentioned, Mr. Chair, a very technical amendment, and we're just getting the bill in the shape that we'd like to go forward.
Very good. Any other thoughts or comments on that, members? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on approval of the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. And before we go to the bill, Representative Garofalo is in attendance. So, Representative Katitza-Watun, if you could explain your House File 3283 as amended to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 3283 is a really exciting bill, and I'm grateful to be here back in Texas and sharing it with you today. So before COVID-19 hit, we knew that our childcare system was broken. Parents can't afford to pay more for care. Early childhood educators and childcare providers are struggling to support their own families on low wages, and the pandemic has exacerbated all of these issues. There are myriad families across the state of Minnesota who pay as much as or even twice as much as their mortgage payment in childcare. Just a few years ago, when we had 3 children under the age of 5, that was the reality for my family. A tax cut to help these families pay for childcare puts money back in their pockets to spend on housing, food, or spending on other things in our economy. In addition, we're facing a critical workforce shortage. We've seen a disparate number of women leave the workforce in order to care for their children. Young workers are often young parents with young children. Currently in the Midwest, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin offer no state-based child care tax credit. Iowa does offer 2 options for taxpayers with an annualized income under $45,000 a year. The Great Start Child Care Tax Credit says to families with young children, you're welcome in Minnesota. We want you to live, work, and raise your families here, and we will help you do it. Until a child turns 5 and is eligible to begin kindergarten, public investment at either the state or federal level is marginal at best. While some temporary programs throughout the pandemic have provided some assistance to young families, no permanent relief has been passed. The Minnesota legislature has the opportunity to do what no other state has done and expand our current dependent care credit into the Great Start Child Care and Dependent Care Credit. Here is how we will do it. So currently, families with only 1 child are only able to claim up to $3,000 of child care related costs. Families with 2 or more children are only able to claim up to $6,000 of childcare related costs, and larger families are provided no additional benefit. The Great Start Child Care Tax Credit will allow families with 1 child under the age of 5 to claim up to $10,000 in childcare related costs. Families with 2 young children can claim up to $20,000 in childcare related expenses, and families with 3 or more children may claim an additional $5,000 for a total of $25,000 of childcare related expenses. The Great Start Child Care and Dependent Care Credit is refundable. The credit will cover 50% of these costs until the taxpayer's annual gross income exceeds $125,000 a year, at which point it phases down to covering 20% of those eligible costs. After gross annual income exceeds $400,000, the covered percentage phases down to 0, and only 1 credit can be claimed per household. For children under the age of 1, the maximum amount of qualifying expenses is assumed. And this is just to reflect the unique challenges of raising and caring for a newborn, as well as the much higher cost of childcare for our very young children. This bill, members, not only lifts up Minnesota children and families, but it's a much needed support to our economy as we rebound from the pandemic. With that, Mr. Chair, I would invite our testifiers to share their thoughts, and I will stand for questions.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Katitza-Watun. And just before you go on, just the revenue estimate on the bill. I always like to mention that if the authors have not. So you should all have this, members. But for 2023, the cost would be $203.5 million. For 2024, $209.4 million. And for fiscal year 2025, $211.3 million. And just for clarification, and I you said this, but so for 1 child age 0 to 4, the maximum credit could be up to $5,000, and for 2 children 0 to 4, $10,000, and for 3 or more children 0 to 4 would be $12,500 credit. Is that correct, Representative?
Mr. Chair, that it's covered at 50%. So yes, that is, those are numbers are correct.
Okay.
They can claim twice that amount.
All right. Thank you very much. So let's go to the testifiers before we go to members. And we do have 9 testifiers, so I'd like to ask all the testifiers to limit your testimony to 3 minutes, if you would. And so first is Lars Nagstead, and then Nicole Lighthouser is on deck. So Lars Nagstead, if you would identify yourself, there you are, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Lars Nagstead, and I am the policy director for ISAIAH. ISAIAH is a statewide organization of congregations, mosques, child care centers, and barbershops. Our mission is to build a democracy that respects every person's dignity and a caring economy where everyone can thrive. I'm speaking today on behalf of Kids Count on Us, a coalition of 512 child care centers serving over 25,000 children across Minnesota. No matter where they live or what they look like, every Minnesota child deserves an enriching environment, especially during their formative early years. Yet for too long, we have failed to ensure support for families with young children. The truth is our child care system is broken and dangerously close to collapse. Many people without young children don't realize that it costs more to put a child in child care than in college. Yet most families with young children are still early in their working lives. In other words, we expect the most financially of families when they are least able to afford it. At the same time, we ask childcare workers to do the most important and arguably most challenging work in the state. I'm a parent of a 10 and 12 year old, so it wasn't too long ago, and I recall this, for wages that are among the lowest of any in any industry. Childcare centers are facing a crisis in finding and retaining staff. The lack of public support for childcare keeps people out of the workforce. It drives the gender pay gap. It means too many children don't get the early education they need to thrive. This failure hurts everyone in our state, but it hits families of Black, Indigenous, and people of color the hardest. The COVID pandemic has highlighted the precarious position of childcare in our nation. The truth is we need to overhaul how we think about childcare, expanding access to affordable care, while upgrading the quality of jobs in the sector. This will take a large public investment, but one that will reap great rewards in better health, education, and economic outcomes. As you will hear from other testifiers, most families with young children struggle to pay for childcare. This bill would provide much needed support to those families. We thank Representative Cotiza Watoon for authoring this bill and urge your support.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. Next, we have Nicole Lighthouser, and then Laura Gannon on deck. So there you are. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt and committee members. My name is Nicole Lighthouser, and I live in Cottage Grove. I am a single parent to 3 children, and I appreciate your time very much today. I want to share my story as a single mother trying to afford childcare and urge you to support HF 3283. Childcare costs are completely unaffordable in our state for most families. It was so unaffordable for me that I had to quit teaching in early childhood special ed to work in childcare. After I had my second child, I decided to run childcare out of my home because I could not afford to pay childcare for 2 children. I did this for 5 years, during which time I had my 3rd child and then went through a divorce. That led to my return to teaching because I had to show more income on paper in order to be able to refinance my home in my name only to keep it. Finding childcare for 3 kids at that point was nearly impossible. My income was $30 too much to qualify for assistance. I was only able to make it happen because a new neighbor moved in that ran an in-home childcare, and she gave me a huge discount. But Minnesota families should not have to rely on the kindness of their neighbors to afford childcare. And those neighbors shouldn't have to take a loss of income either. The pandemic compounded a system that was already in distress. My school-aged children were too young to be on their own for distance learning, but I couldn't pay for childcare. I had to choose between working and helping my kids. I eventually started helping my neighbor with her childcare so I could do both, but it was a huge pay cut. We were barely scraping by last spring when I was diagnosed with an aggressive form of cancer, and which required aggressive treatment. My chemo required me to be inpatient for 1 week at a time, every 3 weeks for months. Every person who has experienced cancer knows the devastating costs of being ill in this country. I have no savings. I have student loans from returning to school to get my master's with the hope of a higher paying job. I had to empty my retirement account, the little bit that I had, to pay bills, and my house is in forbearance because I am not able to return to work yet post-treatment. My story is unfortunately not unique. There are so many parents across the state dealing with similar challenges. There are also many parents working multiple full-time jobs to make ends meet who still cannot afford childcare. I urge you to support this bill and make a huge difference in the lives of so many. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lighthouser, and hopefully your health situation is good. So, thank you. Next is Laura Gannon, and on deck, Ronnie Bradke.
Hello again, Chairman. Good to see you. Hello again, Chair Markford and members of the committee. My name is Laura Gannon, and I was just here yesterday testifying for Rep. Hurd's student loan tax credit bill. I'm here again, and this time in support of Rep. Katizawa-Witoon's bill expanding the child tax credit bill. So that's HF3283. I'm grateful to the tax committee and that they're both taking on these bills this session because they would go a long way to help families like mine. As I mentioned yesterday, I live in Circle Pines, Minnesota with my husband and two kids. My youngest is 3 years old and attends a nonprofit preschool that is high quality and yet the most affordable in our area. We love her preschool and the excellent learning environment that the staff members excel at creating. However, it is a huge financial burden for two working parents who don't qualify for any assistance. As I stated yesterday, our current monthly childcare bill is as much as our mortgage. So in order to pay for our mortgage, my student loan, and full-time preschool, we have to pay the equivalent of three mortgages every month. Our childcare costs are through the roof with two kids. And like many parents, my student loan debt only compounds the larger problem. We moved to Minnesota because I was offered a position with better pay and a state with a better cost of living than we had in Silicon Valley. We knew childcare costs would be less in Minnesota. However, the cost of childcare for a child under 5 is still incredibly hard to pay here. I will admit that it is such a difficult expense to pay that I'm currently behind on payments and playing catch up. Due to emergent, unexpected expenses. I'm currently waiting for my yearly performance share to pay out so that I can pay that balance off. I'm lucky to have this option, as many working families do not. Chair Marquardt, I appreciate your focus this session on bills that can help families like mine experiencing the immense weight of both student debt and childcare costs. I also want to thank Rep. Katizawa-Witoon for bringing this bill forward. It would be an immense relief to be able to claim a tax credit like this and continues to show us that Minnesota is a great place to live and raise a family. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Ronnie Bradke. On deck is Claire Leinisch. So Ronnie Bradke.
Hi. Yes, thank you, Chair Markquardt.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, yes, my name is Ronnie Bradke, and I'm here to share my support for HF 3283. My husband, Ben, and I live in St. Paul, and we have two young children, Clark, who is 3.5, and Carolyn, who is almost 2. Ben is a grocer, an essential worker. I work in higher education. So far, we have never had full-time daycare for both children due to lack of affordability and availability. At my very first appointment with my OBGYN back in 2017, she asked if I was on daycare waitlist and was worried for me that I wasn't. I was only 8 weeks pregnant. We have made this work for 3.5 years by splitting shifts, working early in the morning, late in the evening, and on weekends. We are fortunate to have jobs that allow this flexibility, knowing it wouldn't be possible for everyone. When we first started looking for full-time daycare for both children, most places had waitlists that were months long. The one place we could find with available spots was a childcare center that cost $308 a week per child. We knew we could never afford the $2,500 a month that would cover both kids full time. That was more than twice our rent. 37% of our income before taxes. Instead, we enrolled them in the center for 2 days a week for a total of $1,600 a month, giving us enough breathing room that neither of us needed to quit our jobs as we split shifts, taking out another essential worker or another woman out of the employment pool. Despite the slight breathing room, we couldn't save any money. We couldn't work toward buying a house. We had no emergency fund. Finally, we caught a break. A friend referred us to a home daycare, a unicorn, a block from our house and only $144 a week per kid. The catch? She couldn't take anyone under two, and this is her very first opening since before the pandemic started. Great for us, but hardly a systemic solution, and only available to us because we were lucky enough to know the right person. We have been at this daycare for nearly a year, continuing to split shifts to cover our youngest child's care. She will join her brother when she turns two in April, bringing our monthly cost to $1,200. Still more than our rent, but for the first time in 3.5 years, we'll both be able to work at the same time and spend more time together as a family. This bill would have made the last 2 years so much easier. We would have had more options, not needing to grab on to the first place in our price range. Daycare teachers could be paid what they're worth instead of what we parents can scrape together to pay, leading to more expertise and less turnover. We could work sooner toward long-term financial stability for our children. I'd like to thank Representative Cotiza Witoon for bringing forward this bill and ask the committee to support it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Claire Leinisch, and on deck, Eric Bernstein. So Claire Leinisch, there you are. Welcome to the committee and please introduce yourself.
Sure thing. Thanks so much for having me. Can you all hear me okay?
We can.
Okay, great. Yeah, my name is Claire Leinisch. Thank you, Chair Marquardt and all the committee members for having me today. I'm here to share support also for HF3283. I live in St. Paul and am a licensed family child care provider. I mainly serve St. Paul families out of the daycare in my home, the Nashville Day School, and I have a mixed age care environment. I've been doing this work for 7 years, with most families sending me their tiny babies and keeping them with me until kindergarten. I have one child myself, and one of the best parts of my job is watching her learn from the older kids and seeing the older ones learn empathy and kindness in relation to the young ones. And of course, the other main perk is not having to look for childcare for my own child. The parents I serve are extremely dedicated to their child or children's well-being, and we work together as a team to support their children through all the big life stuff of the early years. And these parents have chosen me because I provide consistency of care, healthy food, lots of time outside, and a focus on social and emotional growth. They value the work that I do and pay me market rate for my services. And we can all agree that while it's a tremendous expense for them, it's barely enough. As a result, most of my families have only one expense larger than their childcare every year, and that's their mortgage. A few years into my business, I instituted a policy of a 3% raise of my rates every year so families can plan for that. This policy is still in place, and while it provides my family a level of financial stability, I do tremendously feel for my daycare parents. Every year, the cost of food goes up, the cost of gas to and from their jobs, their property taxes go up, and now I have added to the consistency of this climb. When the parents pay me, I use this money to pay my mortgage, pay my taxes, both the employer and the employee portion, as I am self-employed, buy health insurance for my family, as we have no employer coverage option. And then what's left, we save for our retirement and our daughter's college. The spending of my daycare families is largely the same, with many facing the added cost of supporting aging family members and or paying student loans. As many have already talked about, and I'm sure many committee members know, the early years of parenthood are no logistical walk in the park. Finding quality childcare is ridiculously hard, if not impossible. Being able to afford it at all is not a given, and for many families, it's completely out of the question. Increasing this tax credit would not only be a token of respect to the parents trying to provide healthy and safe environments to their children, but also a real tangible bottom line difference for the families that I serve. This bill could be a meaningful first step toward addressing the myriad of issues that face parents and providers as we all try to navigate this industry while getting our children what they need. Thank you so much, Rep. Cotiza Witoon, for bringing forward the bill, and thank you all for having me today. Happy to be here.
Thank you very much for your testimony and for work you do, and you're holding on to our very precious future there. So thank you. I'd like to note Representative Miller is now in attendance. Next up is Eric Bernstein and Jennifer Olson on deck. Eric Bernstein.
Hi, Chair Marquardt, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Marquardt, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bernstein, and I'm policy director at We Make Minnesota. I'm happy to be here today to testify in favor of HF 3283, which would greatly expand Minnesota's dependent care credit, providing essential relief to families struggling to cope with our broken child care system. I think the committee has an easy job today. Everyone knows that child care in Minnesota is scarce and unaffordable, and that we as a state and as a country are vastly underinvesting in early childhood care and education. The Federal Reserve found that Minnesota spends $10,000 per child between the ages of 5 and 17, but just $2,500 on children aged 3 and 4, and only $900 per child for the first 3 years of life. In 2020, Deed reported that Minnesota was short an estimated 80,000 child care slots, and according to the Center for American Progress, the average cost for center-based care in 2021 was $16,200 for an infant and $14,100 for a toddler. As a percentage of family earnings, Deed found that center-based care would consume 16 to 19% of median Minnesota household income, and as much as 38% of household income for Black families, and more than 50% for single parents. This places many Minnesotans in the impossible position of picking between working and paying the high cost of care or staying home to save. The problem this creates for our workforce is a matter of broad consensus. I'm not sure if they're here to support this bill today, but in its Minnesota 2030 report, the Chamber of Commerce named affordable childcare as one of the top three priorities for ensuring a strong economy over the next decade and beyond. This tax credit would be a great first step towards achieving that objective, and I very much hope it will pass this session. However, I'd like to make one note based on some recent research that was in the media. Recent studies have cast some doubt on the much celebrated benefits of early childhood care, and the upshot of that conversation suggested that not all child care is equal, and that the quality of child care sought differs substantially by income. So although this bill will help many families struggling with large child care expenditures, it may unequally benefit or exclude some low-income households that seek cheaper care or avoid childcare expenses altogether. Children of these lower-income households will not benefit from the high-quality developmental environments and will find themselves at a comparative disadvantage to their higher-income peers. So I think this is a great bill, but a universal system or a childcare credit would afford families and children more similar benefits and opportunities regardless of race or income. So I hope that in addition to passing SF3283, the committee will consider the funding needs of longer term solutions, more universal solutions, and protect the revenues that those programs will require. So just don't cut taxes, especially not for rich people. That was the last part there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for your testimony today. Next up is Jennifer Olson, and on deck, Daniel Inovino-Cowley. Jennifer Olson. There you are. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jennifer Olson. I'm a member of AFSCME Council 5, Local 2440, and I'm also the mother of a beautiful six-year-old girl. I'm here today to talk to you a little bit about the hardship that Minnesota's families experience due to the child care costs. When I became pregnant, I was told to look for child care as soon as possible, as openings, especially for infants, were in short supply. I was quoted prices ranging from $200 to $350 a week, which was 20 to 34% of my net income. I secured daycare for my child 5 months before she was born. I was told I would need to pay for her spot prior to her birth for the remainder of my pregnancy and through my 8-week parental leave, 6 weeks of which were completely unpaid. I would have to pay for a daycare spot, not even occupied by my child. This isn't uncommon. Sometimes it's a reduced rate. Sometimes it's full price. Shortly after reserving the spot, the provider told me the spot was no longer available, so I was not required to pay for the spot. I was later fortunate to secure childcare with a family member for a reduced cost. Just before my daughter was a year old, I found an affordable daycare provider. It took me 7 months to find an affordable daycare provider. By affordable, I mean she charged just under $200 a week for one child. The provider was new to childcare, and as a result, she has slightly reduced her rates when compared with the prices I was quoted prior to my daughter's birth. Even at the slightly reduced rate, it was difficult to afford. I took on a second job to pay for daycare. Before my daughter was a year old, I was working two jobs to help cover the cost of her childcare. My daughter was in this daycare for about 6 months when the provider suffered a medical emergency and it rendered her unable to provide care. I was notified of this on a Sunday and had to find childcare for my daughter immediately. This time I didn't have 7 months to search. I was at the mercy of whatever provider had an opening for whatever price they wanted. That price turned out to be more than $250 a week. This was another hit to my household budget. I had to take on more hours at my second job. I even considered selling my house and living with my parents to make ends meet. Please think about that. As a single mother with two jobs and a house, I was in a position where daycare costs were so overwhelming to my household budget that I had to consider selling my home to stay afloat. When compared with what a lot of Minnesota families experience, I actually had it pretty easy. I had resources. I had family available to help me. I shared expenses with my child's father. I was able to get and keep a second job while my daughter was with her father. And if everything else came crashing down, I had a home with equity that I could sell and family that I could live with. I had resources and it was still extremely difficult. I can't imagine what people who have fewer resources experience, both in finding and paying for childcare. I'm from a rural area, so childcare is a bit less costly than it is in the metro area. Coworkers and family members that I have in the metro area have said they consider $350 a week, which is the top end of my initial daycare quotes, to be pretty standard, and that cost went up for them from there. One of my coworkers has daycare expenses that exceed 40% of her family's income for two children. Both she and her husband work full-time. The cost of daycare and the lack of paid parental leave is causing families to delay having children. It's causing them to stay.
Ms. Olson, would you kind of complete your test? Thank
you. I'm two left.
Okay.
Parents can't work without reliable and affordable childcare, and businesses can't thrive without workers. So I ask that you please consider the Great Start Child Independent Care Credit and the benefits that it offers Minnesota families and businesses.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, Danielle Indovino Colley, and then our final testifier, Jennifer Nelson, on deck. So there you are. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Danny Indovino Colley, Danielle as well, and I want to thank you to the chair and for the committee to hear me today. I'm here as a parent today, but I do also serve on the Early Childhood Advisory Council in Bloomington, as well as the Special Education Community Advisory, and I'm the outgoing chair for the parenting group at Best Buy Corporate. So I also, have a lot of experience talking to parents about this issue. I want to talk about my life though right now. So I have two kids, a 3-year-old and an 18-month-old, both of which are in full-time daycare right now and have been since the end of my 12-week leave. My older child is in a daycare center, so which at 3 years, that cost me $320 a week. My younger child is at an in-home daycare and his care is $250 a week. So together that's about $570. So I'm paying $30,000 a year in childcare. My children are split up because we couldn't afford the $400 a week for an infant. So while my oldest gets special education services and really needs the structure of a center, so we tried putting her in an in-home and her speech just didn't progress. She needed to be in a center. Because of that, we spend almost 2 hours a day dropping off and picking up children, and that's time we could be spending with our kids, engaging them, loving them, teaching them, rather than taking them in and out of car seats and kind of leaving them without any developmental or entertainment in the car. And after all that, after childcare, healthcare, and taxes, I only take home about 20% of my salary, and then most of that goes to student loans. So I'm working to pay bills and not to better my family, except for, I guess, healthcare. But and then right now, I'm working for my mental health and to hold a place and a salary in the workforce, because I know that there is a penalty for me to leave the workforce for 5 years. But my husband and I often question if it's worth it, and if we weren't going to do it, which one of us would leave? Neither of us wants to stop working. We like our jobs, but does it really make sense if it's negatively impacting our families and not benefiting that much? And we're lucky. So just yesterday, I was on a text chain with other mothers across the metro that was focused on childcare. More than one mother on the chain would have to pay more in childcare than they would be making at their job. So they literally couldn't afford to work, which is unbelievable when you really think about it. And then some of them were single parents. So for them to try to get childcare, they have to consider leaving their kids in unsafe or untested environments, or even bringing their kids to work with them, and leaving the workforce to take care of children increases my child's home, the barrier to leaving for those in domestic violence situations. Lack of access to childcare also drives a disproportionate amount of women from the workforce and leaves them open to isolation, financial dependence, and abuse. It's not just a poverty issue. It isn't just a workforce issue. It isn't just an equity issue. It's also a child safety issue. And so I know this won't solve all of our childcare problems in the state, but it would lift a burden off of families and give at least a little bit more options for people to work and live in community. And lastly, when reading the bill, I noticed that it defines young child as one who doesn't turn 5 before December 31st of the year. But because of the way school district cutoffs work, that would mean parents of kids born between September 1st and December 31st would lose a whole year of this childcare credit while still paying for full-time childcare, because you can't start kindergarten if you are turned 5 after September 1st. So if you change this age to 6, the problem would be solved, and I hope the committee takes this issue into consideration and changes the age so as not to penalize parents who have fall babies, like my November baby that's standing next to me right now. She's about to get on the bus for her special ed preschool. So thanks for listening to me.
Thank you very much. Thanks for those comments. Up next, then, is Jennifer Nelson. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and proceed.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Nelson, and I live in St. Paul. I'm a working parent of 2 young kids. They are 7 and 4. For 7 years now, we've been paying for childcare. Right now, with 1 kid in preschool, we pay $1,300 a month for him to attend a community-based center, which is a steep number, approaching parity with our mortgage payment, but it used to be a lot worse. When we had 2 kids in daycare, we were paying $2,200 a month for them to attend a community-based center, which far outstrips our monthly mortgage payment. This is all really hard on young families, as a lot of people today have talked about. When I was looking to advance my career a few years ago, the cost of childcare really limited my options. And if we'd had a 3rd child, I would have been priced out of a job. Having paid tens of thousands of dollars, which is hard to think about, in childcare over the last 7 years has also meant that we've had to put off other things and to save far less for our futures than we would have liked. We don't give families with young kids very many options. We as families struggle through these years of incredibly high cost burdens because of how important childcare is to our kids and our families. It has been necessary to my family's stability, my career, and most importantly to my children's development. And as an aside, this is also why it is so frustrating to know that the wonderful providers and teachers who have been part of our lives doing this skilled and critical work are so underpaid. That is an issue for another day, maybe, but it is another piece of the puzzle, especially as we noted at the top of this meeting, you know, we're talking about how to deal with the worker shortage. Representative Cotiza Watoon's bill would get us moving in the right direction and significantly improve the child care cost burden that we place on families all over this state. Getting a tax credit for up to 50% of childcare expenses would make a material, tangible difference for families. So I thank you, Representative Cotiza Watoon, for your leadership on this. And just as a quick anecdote, I told a few people this morning that I was doing this and immediately had 2 responses from great women in my life who said, you know, the first one said that she and her partner decided to have just 1 kid because of childcare costs. That was a really big factor for them. And another friend who's actually considering leaving the state, which was hard to hear, because of childcare costs. So I will end it there, but I am happy to offer support for this bill. Thank you for having me, committee members and Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Anyone else that, before I go to members, that is on here that would like to testify on House File 3283 as amended? Again, I want to thank the testifiers for sharing your stories, and I think what came through here was very clear that raising a family is a very loving work, but it's also difficult, and hopefully cost should not be impacting life decisions that are being made. So hopefully this bill can go a ways in solving that. So I will now go to members. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me throw my camera on so that you know that it's really me. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Tizer-Witsoon, for bringing this forward. As I was hearing the testimony, I have a question for Representative the author, Tizer-Witsoon, if I could, but in before that, I just, as I was listening, I was thinking about how our society, when we value something as a society, we usually show our support through tax credits or tax, at least through the taxes. We look at a way of helping that. We've done that with homeownership. We've done that through a lot of different things. So I think this is an important thing. But the question that I have to the author, when I read through the bill, I see this is related to parents who are in the workforce. Are we addressing in any way in this bill holding up the, because it's really important for us to raise our kids right and to have plenty of kids in our society. I'm fully supportive of that. But in the case of parents who choose to stay home, and as was heard through a lot of the testimony, that's a very big financial hit. And so is there any sort of way in this bill that people who choose to stay home with their kids rather than put them in daycare, that they can benefit from a tax credit like this?
Representative Katitza-Witsoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Miller, for that question. I completely agree. Kind of looking at the language of this bill and kind of considering our options, we really wanted to support, obviously, families who are re-entering the workforce after having a child, but you may have noticed, and I think I briefly mentioned it in my opening, but for children under the age of one, the maximum amount of qualifying expenses is actually assumed. So if a parent is going to leave the workforce for those first 12 months of their child's life, they are actually able to claim that full amount for that child without actually having to incur those expenses. So for the first 12 months, they are actually eligible for the maximum amount, which is one way that we're hopeful to encourage parents to take the time that they need to stay home with their babies.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do appreciate that. I do want to only make a distinction to make my point is I can support that, but understand that I personally know many families, and dare I say, this is what my family chose to do, but we purposefully, and this is not just for the mothers. I know the fathers that stay home too, but they make a deliberate choice to stay home with that child and raise them, we'll say roughly speaking, until that child goes to school, which is reflective of this five-year-old thing. And so I would just encourage, I'd like to see it in this bill. I'm also a realist, but I think we need, if we're truly going to be equitable in these things and affect all the people in the state of Minnesota the same way, there are a lot of people out by me in rural Minnesota, there are a lot of people where the parent chooses to stay home to raise that child. And if this is to ensure that we have safe, secure health care or child care so that a child can grow up and be productive members of society, we need to include those people as well. They're taking a direct 100% hit on their income. And I think that it's to be reflected in some way in our tax policies as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much, Representative Katitza-Witsoon, for bringing this forward. And I really want to thank the members of the public who've come and shared what's going on in their lives today. It really moved me a lot hearing the stories today and yesterday. I'm thinking about, you know, the ways that those struggles are connected in people's lives, and the kind of like multiple burdens, and also just like, you know, being a parent, knowing the impact that stress has on the way that you're able to interact and connect with your kid and like show up for them and just like, you know, how important that is through all phases of their lives, and the ways that we have a society that's structured so that is so, so hard for people. Like, it's so hard to do the human things that we want and need to do and that we feel, you know, that we feel compelled to do by like our kind of deepest, most elemental humanity. And, you know, it occurs to me that what we're seeing here is people who are laboring in a fundamentally broken system of public support. And you know, I was just over here because thinking about yesterday and about this bill today, you know, I just found some information on the internet, and you know, by whatever measure, the United States is in the top, you know what, 3 to 6 richest countries in the world. We are unique in our in the brokenness of this of these care systems in our countries, right? Like on every level, on healthcare, on housing, and certainly on education, and certainly in childcare. You know, the average, there's this like, you know, I mean, some countries spend $29,000, I think Denmark and kind of those countries with the most generous social safety net. But, you know, even a country that's much lower income than us, like Germany, spends $10,000 per toddler. This isn't even for babies, right? Per toddler every year in public investment from the federal government in childcare. And in the United States, it's $500. Mr. Bernstein, I'm really glad I didn't know these numbers, right? But he said that it was, you know, $900 per child in Minnesota for kids that are 1 to 3 that we spend on this system. And it's not enough. I mean, it's just not enough. And so I appreciate this effort, and I'm obviously supportive of us materially improving the conditions of people's lives, because that's what we're here to do. And this will do that. And so I'm supportive of this, but we cannot tax credit our way out of fundamentally broken care systems in our country. We cannot, you know, we can't marginally improve things, which just we know leave vast amounts of people in the gap, and babies, kids in our society in that gap of not getting what they need to like move on and participate fully in our world. And so, you know, like I said, I mean, I'm supportive of this. I'm supportive of the tax credit that we did yesterday, but it's like these stories from our communities really compel us to fundamentally examine the way that we are investing in the public good in our country and in our state. And so I'm thankful for, you know, for the voices of the people that bring that to us every day. But, you know, it's just really striking me in all my committees, like just the deep struggle that our communities are in. And you know, I just look forward to us thinking more comprehensively about how we respond to those to these needs. So thank you so much, Representative, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Well, I have a question for the author, but a comment for in regards to Representative Gomez's comment regarding health care and daycare and such others. Denmark, I have some friends from Denmark live here close to me in Delano. And of course, if you want a 60 to 80% tax on your income, then perhaps we can afford some of those programs and be so generous with taxpayers' monies. But frankly, I don't think that we Minnesotans have a stomach for a 60 to an 80% income tax. That's just working for the government, but that's socialism from my point of view and out here. But your name was mentioned, so you'll get a chance to speak. But the question is—
I noted that.
Yeah, I do. I know the rules. I've been on this committee for 6 years. So, but Representative, the author, Khatiza Watoon, question for you. Have you done in your research looked at as to why the cost of childcare is so expensive, and why not are we not giving those who work at a daycare center or childcare a tax incentive? And maybe we are, but since I did speak to someone who is works at a daycare provider here in a center here in town, and they're not paid very much, the workers. And yet I hear the cost of $2,500 a month to $1,600 to $25 a month per kid. How come the workers aren't making that? What's the deal? Who's putting that money in the pocket? Why is it so expensive? Are we not offering a tax credit or incentive for the workers so they can keep more money in their pocket, therefore perhaps make it affordable to work at a daycare center? And then secondly, if you recall, and I know you have been around the Capitol for a while, that the unionization or the attempt of at our home daycare providers has been a real turnoff for some of our private daycare providers, and along with that, with the state of Minnesota, the health department pushing and licensing and really intruding into our home daycare providers, not making it worth the while for home daycare providers to even be in business. because the state is constantly down their throat and mandating and licensing and regulating. So there's a huge loss of our daycare providers, and it's partly due to the policies that I've seen in the last 11 years in the Capitol. So in your research, have you looked into if there is a tax credit currently, and or can we help our daycare providers and increase their productivity by allowing them to keep more of their money instead of just the tax credit for those who have a need in the daycare centers?
Representative Katitza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McDonald, thank you so much for that question. I think that you raised a really good point. Absolutely, the entire system of childcare is broken. And so while we're not able to address everything in this bill, really helping the families fill a hole in their pocket and help them afford the childcare payments that they already have is the priority in this proposal. You may remember back in 2019, I actually introduced House File 1, which is the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Act. And that was a really all-encompassing proposal for childcare and early childhood policy. So, I mean, we were raising CCAP rates, we were increasing investments in scholarships, we were so allowing then daycare providers to earn more of the child care assistance program reimbursement rate. So there's a number of things that we are working to do and have previously introduced. We're certainly not where we need to be, but I think that those conversations are ongoing. When you mentioned your concern about regulations and what that looks like here in Minnesota versus some of the other states across the nation, I mean, all you have to do is go across to St. Croix to look at a very different childcare regulatory environment, and you will see that Wisconsin is dealing with the exact same issues that we are. We're losing childcare providers, they're losing childcare providers. It's a really tough business to be in. And while it's some regulations may contribute to folks leaving the industry, it really doesn't seem to be the end all be all, because there are all across the nation, red states, blue states, purple states, wherever, we're all facing this decline in the childcare industry. So I think absolutely we need to work together, put on our creative hats and see what we can do to support our childcare providers. But also we need to take action on this to make sure that parents have the help that they need to find the care that's not so affordable for their kids right now.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tisa Watun, question for you. In your bill and your testimony, did you say it the cap at $110,000 salary can qualify for this credit? Is that, can you correct me if that's not the case?
Representative Katitza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that's not correct, Representative McDonald. So the credit will cover 50% of the cost until annual gross income reaches $125,000, and then it slowly begins to phase down to 20% of eligible costs. And then once annual gross income hits $400,000, then there will be a significant number of families who qualify for this credit that don't currently. Right now, the cutoff for the phase down, begins around $53,000. So this is a massive expansion of the tax cut that we have in place, tax credit that we have in place right now for these families. It'll fill a hole in the pocket for a number of families across the middle income spectrum.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I won't belabor this at all. So based on what you said, Representative, so a family making $375,000 can still qualify for this credit, is that correct?
Representative Katitza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's correct. If they have qualifying children under the age of five. And I do want to point out that while we're expanding the qualifications and expanding the credit percentage, those families who have children over the age of five or who have other dependents living with them, the existing dependent care credit is still going to be in place. So while this is really targeting our lower the earliest Minnesotans and their families, we're not making any changes to the existing dependent care credit. So those families still can receive what they receive right now.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Watun, don't you think families that make $399,000 probably
necessarily need this credit.
Representative Katitza Watun, did you hear that? It was broken up a little bit. Would you repeat that, Representative McDonald? I couldn't hear it very well.
All right. I asked for families that are making $399,000, don't you think this credit is a little excessive for them? Or not necessary if you're bringing in $399,000.
Representative Katitza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative McDonald, I think you're asking about families who make $399,000 a year and whether or not they need this credit. I think that that's a really good point. What we are hoping to do with this is just expand the qualifications. We know that there are a number of families who don't qualify right now for really any assistance when it comes to childcare. And so I think a number of our testifiers pointed that out. We know also that, you know, if two individuals who are married filing jointly are making $50,000, I mean, that they've already hit a six-figure income. And as you go up and as your costs go up, as, you know, if you're paying for college education, loans down the line, I mean, it's not out of line to think that, you know, families may need some sort of assistance for childcare, especially depending on how many kids they have that they're looking to take care of while both parents may be working outside the home.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, I see there's other hands, so I'll close just in saying this, that one of the last testifiers said that, unfortunately, one of her friends is leaving the state because of the high cost of childcare. I would presume it's the high cost of living in Minnesota all over the place because we are a very high tax state. Income tax, sales tax, corporate tax, and the death tax. So we are a high tax state, and we need to do something about it and lower the tax rate so people can stay here, live here, and afford childcare. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to point out that those child care providers that get those low wages could really use an expansion of this credit as well. So getting back to focusing on the bill before us, I just wanted to thank Chair Marquardt for really having that focus on our workforce and making sure that we can have a workforce there for our employers and looking at ways we can help those people be able to stay in that workforce. I think it's really important. And I have one quick question for Representative Katitza Watun, and just so I could frame, you know, understand what our current child care credit looks like. So could you quick run through those numbers again on the current child care credit?
Representative Katitza Watun.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin, for bringing that up. So yes, we are not only expanding the credit from 35% to 50%, but then we're expanding the eligible expenses and costs. So right now, the maximum Minnesota and federal credit is $1,050 for one child and $2,100 for two children or more. So larger families with three or more children don't have any additional they don't have any additional eligible benefit. And I think that was a change that was really important to me personally. My husband and I adopted three children back in 2018. And at that point in time, we had a two-year-old, a three-year-old, and a four-year-old. And it's there are not a lot of people having large families these days. And so I think that if that's something that people want to do, it's really important that we do what we can. An extra qualifying expense of $5,000 can really help people if that is their family situation. So we are drastically increasing the amount that they are eligible to claim. And then so the maximum right now, again, for one child, $1,050, it would then go up to $5,000. And then for two children, $2,100, it would not then go up to $10,000. And then for three or more children, right now that is again $2,100. But they would be eligible for $12,050.
$500,
yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you, yeah. Mr. Chair.
Excellently explained there, Representative. So, Representative Joaquin.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Rosa Katitza Watun, can you remind me, though, when that, on the current credit, when does the phase out start? I think you said 53,000.
Representative Katitza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's correct. It starts at $53,630 with an annualized income.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you. That's what I thought I heard you say, and I just kind of wanted to paint a picture of that. Just so folks know, a starting teacher in Minnesota makes on average $33,000 a year, and if their partner is making $15 an hour, that's who we're talking about. Okay, those are the folks that we're talking about, and that starting teacher probably has school loans, and they may be just getting a mortgage or even just trying to pay rent in our state. So I just wanted to paint that picture, and also wanted to say that this is really an economic issue. Bottom line, it's an economic issue. Recently, the Minnesota Chamber members were surveyed, and 76% of them said 62% of them said the importance of childcare shortages were an issue with their employers. It was an issue in hiring employees, and it was an issue with growth for their own businesses. We have, just in the Twin Cities alone, we have 76% of all parents working outside of the home if they can afford it, and a lot can't. And there's been a national survey saying that if we just lower the price in childcare by 10%, you will get an increase in up to 11% in just maternal women moving back into the workforce. That doesn't even include all parents going back into the workforce. And women are 42% either their sole or primary breadwinner in the family. And we've seen that drastic decline of women in the workforce highlighted during COVID. And we can't afford to do that in Minnesota. We can't afford to leave people behind like that. And I wanted to lift this up too, because back in 1995, when I was working in the journalism field and my husband was a starting teacher and we had our first child, if I would have continued my job, I would have been paying just for childcare. So I chose to stay home, but we still struggled. Not only that, my husband worked three other jobs. I worked and waitressed at night when he came home, and we still struggled to meet our bills. So I know, you know, I wouldn't have traded it for the world, the time I spent with our children. We were lucky to even have that choice. And the only reason we did is because we worked so many extra jobs. So there is a lot of Minnesotans that don't have that opportunity, and we need to be there to help them if we want to see our economy grow. So, you know, like I said, bottom line, this is about making sure that we have a workforce out there in Minnesota going into the future, and that we're attractive to folks coming into state to work, out of state to work here. So thank you so much, Representative. I also wanna thank you for all the work you're doing on the other aspect of our childcare sector, making sure that employees are paid better, making sure that our childcare stay open and have the support that they need to do that too. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gomez, your name was mentioned a while back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep it brief because I talked a lot, but, you know, we haven't had much hand-to-hand combat yet in this committee, but me and Representative McDonald have talked once or twice before about these issues. But I just wanted to point out, you know, we pulled out Denmark, I think, or Norway or something as an example, and they do spend 60 times as much as the United States spends on childcare for a toddler. But there, I mean, I can read you the list. I can't, because I would take up almost the whole rest of our time together if I read you the entire list of nations that contribute more than the United States does to childcare. But I mean, Latvia, Japan, Spain, Poland, Slovenia, the Czech Republic, Chile, Portugal, Canada, Mexico, Turkey, Greece, New Zealand. I mean, it's not just certainly, you know, countries that you might decide are bastions of socialism that are doing a better job for their people at this than we are. So, you know, I just wanted to mention that, and also just that it's not safe to make assumptions about why people move out of the state of Minnesota. I think if our testifier's friend said they moved out of Minnesota because they couldn't afford the cost of childcare, it's probably about that and not the estate tax that 99.9% of Minnesotans will never ever pay because we're not millionaires. So I think we need to maybe take people at their word on that. Thank you.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I want to thank Representative Cotiza-Waitun for bringing this subject to the forefront. I do believe that families create strong neighborhoods. Having strong neighborhoods makes stronger communities. And what I have witnessed change during my lifetime is we kind of have a new definition of family. And there are certainly challenges when you don't have two incomes to meet some of these obligations. Like Representative Yu Kim, this subject and this issue with regard to daycare is not a new problem. It was a problem back when she was raising kids, and I'm a little bit older than her, and it was no different for us. We had three children. My wife was a nurse. We did the math, and it made sense to quit being a nurse and to stay home. And even though nurses' wages were not what they are today, adjusted for inflation, it was still comparable. So she had a skilled job and, you know, paid fairly well. But all things told, when you had the income minus payroll taxes, plus commuting costs, going to and from work, all of it said, she was working for less than a buck an hour. And so those are decisions that do have to be made. So my question to the representative would be, you know, I'd just like to point out that in Minnesota, our minimum tax rate on individual income for our lowest income wage earners and workers is higher than the maximum rate in 23 other states. My question would be, shouldn't we take a balanced approach to this? I mean, I'm all for helping families get ahead and lift themselves out of poverty, but shouldn't we not also be making structural changes in our tax code, particularly right now in a time of surplus, to make sure that hardworking families are incentivized to work and take home more of their paycheck on every paycheck? So I think there should almost be kind of a balance of making sure that the state doesn't take your money and then decides whether or not you're worthy of having some of your money back in the form of a rebate, but we should take kind of a two-pronged approach to solving the problems of those who are experiencing the disparity between the haves and the have-nots. And I think this is something that we should have a serious debate about in this committee, given the amount of surplus that we have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cotiza-Waitun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your comments, Representative Hertaus. I'm privileged to serve in this body along so many other amazing people who have raised children, who have done really incredible and wonderful things, and who serve such different districts than myself. I think that you have a fair point. And I don't have the pleasure to serve on this committee. I'm visiting today, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion with you all. I'll be tuning in. I'll be paying attention to the conversations that you guys have and some of the other bills that are introduced by perhaps, you know, some members on my side of the aisle, members on your side of the aisle, about what we can do to build a better Minnesota for everyone. Thank you.
Representative Hertaus, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cotiza-Waitun. I was hopeful that that might be the response, and I think that we can put the partisan issues aside, and you know, we need to kind of balance help and relief with some structural reform. We have the time and the opportunity to do it. If it can't happen now, it's never going to happen. Thank you.
Thank you. And one interesting note to all of that, and that a lot of people might forget, is that a few years ago when we doubled the standard deduction and kept the dependent exemptions, other than the states that, of course, don't have an income tax at all, for a family of four, we actually have the highest zero tax bracket of any state. It's like $34,800 if you take the standard deduction plus the two exemptions. So, again, when you look at families and rates, sometimes it doesn't, or the rates don't always tell the full story on things. But thanks for that point. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cotiza-Waitun, under this bill, would daycare providers themselves qualify for the tax credit if they had their children in their own daycare?
Representative Cotiza-Waitun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, thank you, Representative Swedzinski, for that question. I actually thought of pointing that out earlier, and then I forgot in my comments to Representative McDonald. For those people who, like one of our testifiers, has their children in their own at-home daycare, they do qualify for this credit.
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Wakiza, I'm sorry. Do you have to have your children in a licensed daycare to qualify?
Representative Katitza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Swedzinski. Off the top of my head, I don't think that is the case. I will double check the language and I can confirm.
Yeah, and maybe Mr. Williams, could you help out on that at all? I think I'm trying to look and there's
Representative Marquardt and Representative Swedzinski, are you talking about the provision specifically for people who operate a at-home daycare and send their own children to that daycare, or more generally for the credit?
More generally for the credit, sir.
Chair Marquardt and Representative Swedzinski, the bill relies on the federal definition of employment-related expenses that are used for the federal dependent care credit. I'm not sure if it's limited to licensed daycares only, so I could follow up with that after the committee hearing.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Representative Swedzinski?
No, that kind of hits it on the head. My thought is, part of this bill's goal is to, drive parents out of the home and into the workforce. There is value. I believe that a parent is in the home helping to raise children, by passing on beliefs, passing on work ethic in the home, whether it's a mom or a dad, doesn't matter. There is value to that beyond just making sure that people are available to be employed by our corporations and businesses. And, I think, this bill does try to reach out and solve a bill of work shortages. But, let's keep in mind, we've killed 60 million people in this country that never had a chance to live out of convenience. And, this is part of that process of the growing pains of our country and what we've done in the last 45 years. And, it's difficult and we got to try to find some ways to fix it, but we have fundamental issues and detriments in our society. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kutitsa Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Swedzinski, I appreciate your comments. Some of you may be surprised to discover that outside of the legislature, which is supposed to be a part-time legislature, and I think we all have some interesting thoughts on how the last couple of years have gone, at least, I am a stay-at-home mother. So I do have four kids. Our oldest is 8. I have a 6-year-old, I have a 5-year-old, and I have an 18-month-old. And so I concur with those of you who have shared the fact how much of a value having a parent who is able and willing to stay home and raise their children is. And I think that I would welcome continued thoughts and suggestions to improve this bill. Potentially, I know Representative Miller had mentioned earlier, if there's a way to even expand it such that we can allow folks who are home, who are.
Representative Katitza Watun, you're cutting out here. You have frozen.
Hear me?
I can right now, yes, but not up to that point.
I was just sharing that the fact that I'm a stay-at-home parent outside the legislature, and that I would be willing to have bipartisan discussions with other members and see if we can expand the credit even further to allow further support for stay-at-home parents.
Very good. Any other members' comments or questions? Representative Katitza Watun, any closing comments on your bill as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I really appreciate the discussion today and all the feedback, all of our testifiers who shared their stories. I guess in closing, I just want to point out that research by Nobel-winning prize Nobel Prize winning economist James Heckman has shown that for each dollar invested in quality early childhood programming, it can yield up to $16 in return. So many families in Minnesota don't qualify for the support that's currently available for childcare, and we know that the pandemic hasn't impacted all Minnesotans equally. The expansion and creation of the Great Start Child Care and Dependent Care Credit puts money back in the pockets of middle-income families. This proposal would not only help provide a great start to every child in Minnesota, but also a great start for a bipartisan movement to prioritize family economic security. As we consider how to invest this historic surplus in the future of the state of Minnesota, I would ask that you support a historic tax cut for our littlest Minnesotans and their families. Thank you so much for your consideration.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Katisa Watum, for bringing this forward and for your thoughts today. And, you know, these last 2 days, members, is, you know, the tax committee, we're going to focus like a laser beam on this workforce shortage problem. I mean, there is no doubt that this might be the biggest challenge facing our economy right now in so many ways, leading to inflation and work shortage of workers in all of these important fields and supply chain, supply disruptions and so forth. So, yeah, these two approaches that we've had the last 2 days and greatly expanding the student loan credit and today the Great Start Child Care and Dependent Credit doesn't solve all the problems, but I do think it sends a very clear message out there is that we want to address this workforce shortage, and we know we have to not only retain our young workers and our families, but attract young workers and families to the state. And I think what you've heard the last few days goes a long way in doing that. And they're big ideas. There's no doubt about this. These are big ideas, but those are the type of things we need to do at this time to really make sure our economy moves forward and that we make sure we can improve our quality of life for everyone everywhere in the state. So with that, Representative Joaquin renews her motion to lay over House File 3283 as amended for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Members, thank you so much. Coming up next week, we have three bills on Tuesday by Representative Bonner, Representative Erdahl, and Representative Robbins. And then on Wednesday and Thursday, we're scheduled to hear the governor's tax bill. We're hoping that will be introduced on Monday. So that would give folks a couple days before Wednesday to be able to take a good look at the language and so forth. So with that, members, thanks for your work this week and have a wonderful weekend coming up. And with that, we are adjourned.